Welcome to another Impress podcast. My name is Kurt Connell-Kawana and I am Head of Regulation here at Impress. And today I'm joined by Slatina Zidorova, who is currently the Project Manager at the European Journalism Centre. She's joining us from Maastricht today and has worked on numerous areas in journalism, such as entrepreneurship and innovation, education, social inclusion and gender equality. And her current project is one that is of much interest to the space of journalism online. We'll be talking about hate speech. So thank you very much for joining us today, Martina, and welcome to the Impress podcast.
Hello, and thank you very much as well.
So this is a really interesting question for journalism in the digital age. The era we live in now, and as much of our lives take place online, is one which is subject, unfortunately, to a lot of online abuse, harassment, and hate speech. And particularly journalists and female journalists and journalists of colour seem to be at the sharp edge of this new and quite disturbing phenomenon. So, in terms of the work that the European Journalism Centre is doing, can you tell us about the data-driven approach to countering hate speech and how this project has come about?
Yes, well, it is actually the DAX project that brought me to the European Journalism Centre. So the concept for the project itself was developed before I joined. But the mission of the European Journalism Centre is to support journalists through various mechanisms, and our focus over the past few years has been on building resilience into journalism. This is where the topic of hate speech actually becomes very relevant, because as you mentioned, hate speech against journalists has increased significantly, especially against women. So in an attempt to understand the nature of online hate and how to better protect journalism professionals, the European Journalism Center partnered with a Greek media monitoring company called Data Scouting, and they developed together the project Data-Driven Approach to Countering Hate Speech. The project was implemented with the financial support of the European Union, and it was implemented over 18 months, during which we mapped hateful content across social media platforms. We also developed machine learning models to detect hate speech, but we also trained journalists on how to counter hateful attacks, how to stay safe online, and how to guard their emotional well-being.
Excellent. That sounds like a really interesting range of work. Can you explain a little bit more about how the mapping and machine modeling works to detect hate speech?
Yes, well, it was actually our Greek partner who were responsible for the technological aspects of the project. So they collected and processed social media content from the major social media platforms. And with the help of the machine learning models and human annotators, they actually labeled social media posts as hate speech or non-hate speech. And the more they trained the machine learning models, the less dependent those models became on human annotation. So this is how we came with an automated tool for detecting hate speech.
That's really interesting, because we certainly find our experience here at Impress when we are assessing the content of our publishers and what they write about, that there is an element of subjectivity in determining what hate speech is. Particularly because certainly for some people what's offensive to them may be considered hate speech to another. So how did you build that into the detection modelling?
That was indeed our biggest challenge, and it wasn't always a very smooth ride, because the first and foremost obstacle that we encountered was how to define hate speech. It is hard to define because there is no universally accepted definition. There are organizations that adopt a stricter definition that emphasizes the legal aspects. Others opt for a broader definition that captures the emotional aspects and consequences as well. But definitions also depend on national legislation, so they vary from one country to another. So this already made it complicated enough. Second, especially in our project, it was really important to define the phenomenon while fully respecting freedom of speech and the divergence of opinions. Because, as also you mentioned, what might sound offensive is not necessarily hate. Apart from those challenges in defining, we also had difficulties to detect hate speech online because there are various tricks that are used by hate posters, for example, writing in slang, in dialect, using emojis and hashtags, also misspelling. So that, combined with the importance of context, made our task even more complicated. And our main tool to overcome and to not to let our models be contaminated was actually to use and to be dependent on human annotation, especially in the earlier stages of the project implementation.
It's really interesting that you mentioned the point about the maybe emotional parameters around hate speech, because I think we can agree that the hate speech can operate at various levels, both on the legal and at the personal. So are you able to sort of describe for us what the main consequences of hate speech you found operate at that psychological level?
Yes, in the course of our project, we did quite a lot of research, so we were already prepared and knew that there are detrimental emotional effects of being exposed to hate speech. On the other hand, we were actually able to witness how online hate affects emotional balance, because, as I mentioned, we were heavily dependent on human annotation, especially during the earlier stages, and we saw our annotators felt increasingly uncomfortable at certain points after browsing through hundreds of examples with threats and incitement to violence. So there was a point when it just became too much. Then we realized that it's even much more detrimental for journalists, and the most negative consequence of that might be that it may force them to silence and to self-censor themselves. There have been cases when people considered career switch or stopped working on different topics, and this is where it really becomes complicated and bad.
Absolutely, and you talked about that there is that balance to strike between detecting, monitoring, and enforcing against hate speech and the right to freedom of expression. But certainly if journalists are not reporting on certain topics, or if they are being silenced because of this online abuse, that becomes a concern for freedom of expression as well. Did you find when you were working with journalists that was one of their primary concerns, or can you describe the types of concerns that they had regarding online abuse?
Yes, based on our project findings and based on the interactions that we had with journalists, their main concerns were actually when and what they can do when they're victims of online hate. Basically, their concern was how do they know that the line has been crossed by haters without interfering with the diversity of opinions and or discussions. There were also other questions related to how they can better protect their privacy, especially given the nature of the journalistic profession, because journalists are very public individuals. There were also concerns around technical and emotional safety. Those were the main types of questions that we were encountered with.
And I can imagine when faced with those questions, there's a desire to want to provide support to journalists in response to them. So what kind of support does the project offer or journalists in need? Or are there other initiatives out there?
Yes, well, if I may start with like a broader discussion of what kind of support journalists need and where do newsrooms stand in all that, we had certain conclusions drawn based on our face-to-face training sessions that we offered within the implementation of the DAX project. We visited 7 newsrooms in 4 European countries. And during those sessions, we learned a lot about how journalists can be supported and how they see the role of their newsrooms. First of all, I think it's crucial to actually start talking about the issue of online hate and to keep that discussion alive within the organizations. How the conversation goes also depends on how much the working environment is open and prepared for that discussion. For example, in our case, in some news organizations, the problem had already been institutionalized in a way. It was recognized, there were procedures and protocols in place, so individual journalists felt safer in a way. They were also more aware of the phenomenon, and they appreciated further training on the topic more. But where the conversation around hate speech just started within the organization, journalists seemed to be more frustrated and they were more doubtful about the potential benefits of such a training, for example. So that's where the role of the news organizations comes into light. And apart from leading that conversation, newsrooms also need to support their staff, especially the freelancers. And that support should include various forms and mechanisms ranging from training, development of ethical standards and reporting procedures, the introduction of technological tools as well. And if I can refer to a great example, there is a wonderful resource developed by the Union of Journalists in Finland, for example. It is called Hate Campaigns, What You Should Do, and it can be used as a stepping stone in that direction, and it can be adapted by various organizations depending on their specific needs.
Well, we'll certainly like to share that resource with our members, who are often smaller and independent publishers who have more limited resources. So it's great to know that there are some good, strong resources out there that can be shared more widely. So one question that we have about the project is how can journalists benefit from Ducks itself? Are there resources that you're providing that could be made available to them?
Yes, absolutely. That was our main idea and objective, to actually come up with usable, sustainable resources. I would like to mention that besides journalists, actually researchers, data scientists and developers can also benefit from the resources produced under the project. But of course, journalists are our main target group, and that is why the majority of the resources are for their use. First, they can follow, and they should follow, the free online course that is called Countering Hate Speech. It can be found on the project website, hatedetection.com. The course has three modules. It covers online safety and tools that journalists can use to protect their privacy. It also tackles issues such as technical and emotional safety. It provides guidance and tips on various counteraction measures that range from reporting, removing hate speech, organizations of counter narratives. So it contains a lot of ready-made solutions and measures that can be immediately applied into the everyday professional lives of journalists. The second resource that is available is the Ducks Alert Monitoring Service. It allows users to register with their Twitter account and receive live alerts or reports that contain aggregated hate speech and personal attack statistics. Those alerts and those reports are based on the content posted on their timeline. So it also allows them to conduct individual analysis or examine possible patterns of hate speech or topics that attract haters, so to say. And finally, there is also an annotation extension, which is basically a Chrome plugin through which journalists can flag hate speech content that they encounter both on Twitter and YouTube. And their examples are then contributed to the Ducks project database. And in this way, they actually help us further improve our data sets and our services. So this is a way to actually contribute to the sustainability and the improvement of our project.
All of those resources sound fantastic, and it's very good to know that they are available and that they can be easily adopted by journalists, freelancers and newsrooms into their work practices. Now, what may appear to be a side issue, but one that you've crucially identified may be an important factor when it comes to dealing with hate speech, abuse and harassment, is the role of diversity in the newsroom. And certainly because the subjects of hate speech, abuse, harassment tend to have various intersections of their identity. I hope you could maybe speak to or explain what role diversity in the newsroom plays when it comes to tackling this problem.
Yes, that is actually a very good question, and we would probably need a separate discussion focused on that. Diversity in the newsroom guarantees that the widest possible range of stories is told by a plurality of voices, so that's why it's crucial to begin with. But it also plays an important role because it makes a strong argument for social inclusion. And given our project and the context in which we're discussing that, it actually sends a message that social aggression is not to be tolerated. So that is why we believe it is a crucial element.
Yes, and it's certainly been wonderful to speak to you about these issues today, Zlatina. And as you said, it's crucial that we keep this discussion alive and ongoing. So we'll be monitoring the activity of DUCS and the European Journalism Centre in this space and sharing with our members and our wider audiences. So thank you very much for joining us today on the Impress podcast. And thank you to our listeners. Remember to check out our previous episodes on the Impress podcast and to follow us on Twitter @ImpressReg, and stay tuned for more episodes soon.